Welcome to another episode of Acts of the Blood God, an independent RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey. Joining me, as always, my lovely co-host, Nadia Oxford.
Hello, Kat. I actually forgot to mention this, but I got Mario Wonder, right, and they gave me a keychain, and I think there's a printing error. I don't know if you can see, but it's really blue.
Why is it so blue?
It's supposed to be, okay, for the people who can't see, it's supposed to be a keychain of Mario coming out of a pipe as Elephant Mario from Mario Wonder, and it's just completely blue. Like, it's almost opaque. You can't see it. It's pretty funny, actually. We're trying to figure out, was this on purpose, or did Canada just get all the faulty stuff?
I'm afraid this Mario blew himself prematurely.
Well, he has that big trunk. I mean,
and that voice you hear making raunchy jokes, why, it's Eric Van Allen.
Come on, that's low-hanging fruit. Everyone who's seen Arrested Development was thinking that one.
Yep, it's time for another episode, in which we'll be talking about RPGs, and this week we're doing a mailbag episode. It's letter time, it's letter time.
It's letter time, it's letter time.
We put out a call for letters in our Discord, which, hey, you can join if you're part of the Patreon. And we got a lot of actually really excellent letters, and I'm very excited to sit down and talk about them for a while with all of you. Taking a little break after a very hectic release schedule, or amidst a very hectic release schedule. All the big action games are coming out now. The RPGs are a little done at the moment, but... before we get to that, though, if you enjoy the podcast, please leave us a review on the podcatcher of your choice. I'm on Twitter at @_catbot. Nadia is at Nadia Oxford, and Eric is at CMoosi, CEAMOOSI. We're also on Patreon at patreon.com/bloodgodpod, where for just $1 a month, you can get access to our Discord, you can get the show ad-free, and you can support the show and keep this train a rolling as we head into year 4 of our independence.
Oh my,
as a
God.
Podcast. Can you believe it? It's been barely. A wild ride, Nadia.
I still feel like 2020 happened, and then nothing happened after that, and here we are.
Nothing happened. We're getting pretty close also to another Pantheon vote. We're currently playing Castlevania Symphony of the Night on the occasion of Halloween. It's a spooktacular Pantheon this month. And we'll even get it out a day early on October 31st so that you can properly celebrate the season. So please look forward to that. That is available to our patrons. All right, let's get to it. It's letter time, folks, and we're going to start with this letter from Old Man Jables. Jables wonders, as the end of the year approaches, what was the biggest RPG surprise for you? Anything is fine, even playing Chrono Trigger, Eric. And they add, oh, also, is a cheesecake a cake or a pie? And I just have to say that cheesecake is definitely a pie. It has the crust of a pie. The graham cracker kind of crust is the best part of it. And therefore, I say pie. I am team pie.
I'm team pie as well. The filling just feels pie-like.
Yeah, I would have been team cake, but the more I think about it, it definitely is a pie. Like, what's the difference between a pumpkin pie and a cheesecake? It's like the
same
thing.
Yeah. Damn, I love pumpkin pie.
That's a pie.
I do love a good cheesecake. If I think about it, I'm like, well, no, of course I like cheesecake better than I like, or of course I like pie or cake better than pie. But when I think about it for half a second, I'm like, but I like the crust of pie, generally speaking, whereas cake is a little too fluffy, a little too soft.
I would take here's the thing. I would take a great cake over a great pie any day. However, I would take an average pie over an average cake every day.
Good point. Yeah, because a bad cake tastes like sawdust. I feel like maybe, I don't know if it's my kind of Slavic cuisine roots here, but I never grew up with pie, only cake. Pie only really got into once my husband married me, and he's like, hey, try pecan pie. I'm like, oh, man, this rules.
We have pecan pie sitting in our kitchen right now, and I've been eyeing it.
My endocrinologist will kill me.
Y'all getting some pecan pie?
Y'all eat. Y'all come eat.
My mom would always make a good angel food cake for my birthday with the strawberries and the white frosting. It's very good.
I am not a chocolate person. I will say that right up front. If you give me vanilla, strawberry, chocolate, chocolate's my last choice every single time.
I'm with you, Nadia.
Vanilla, number one. Strawberry, number two. Chocolate, vanilla. I love vanilla. I love vanilla too. I could have, and it's not like ew, chocolate. It's just like, okay, I have a slice of chocolate cake. Oh God, I can't finish this. It's just way too rich. Give me the angel food with like strawberry and a little whipped cream. That sounds so nice.
Well, let's get to the other question. Biggest RPG surprise. I think my biggest RPG surprise is definitely Baldur's Gate 3 being the best RPG of the year. And before you say, well, I mean, we had good signs from the beta. I wasn't expecting it to be not just a great RPG, but actual legit game of the year contender might be my game of the year. I did not expect it to be that good.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Yeah. Like Baldur's Gate 3, like no matter, like even me, someone who was like on that train, like it is game of the year in a year where a Zelda game has come out and a Mario game has come out, and it is up against what would easily be the most stacked competition, and yet it still seems like the presumptive nominee, if not winner, across the board. It's been fascinating to see people, even people who don't play RPGs normally, who are saying, oh, Baldur's Gate 3, yeah, no, it's Baldur's Gate 3 is one of the best games of the year. And I think that's the true sign of, like, I don't think anyone expected the reach this was going to have.
Yeah, I was not expecting the mainstream crossover. I expected it to be the, you know, the cult nerd game while everybody played Starfield. And instead, it became just a breakout, a mainstream crossover hit. I think it's all due to the fact that it came out a month earlier. I think if it had come out around Starfield time, it might have been buried a tiny bit.
Mm.
Not as much. I think it still would have had a really good chance because it just was that good. But I think it having a clear window to have all the discourse made a huge difference.
I definitely am going with Baldur's Gate 3, but to kind of expand on that, Octopath Traveler 2 was freaking amazing. And I did not see that coming. I was like, okay, I like the first one. Second one, I was blown away. Also, with Zelda, having the whole the depths, that was incredible. That was probably my favorite. I think it's still my favorite game of the year above Baldur's Gate 3 because I just loved mapping those depths and exploring them. Like, my first impression was falling into them and, like, having these skeleton horses charge at me and these moblins with red eyes, like, screaming, like, ah! Like, you don't get that kind of experience in Nintendo games that often. It was a genuinely Junji Ito sort of feeling. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah, my personal pick is Octopath Traveler 2 because I just did not expect to like that game that much. You know, I thought the first Octopath Traveler was fine. It was neat. It was nostalgic in the ways that I expected it to be, and it had some cool new ideas, but largely the writing, the pacing, everything just kind of put me off that game.
Yeah.
And all of that felt fixed by Octopath Traveler 2. And I do think it was an effect of them thinking more about how to use those path actions in interesting ways. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was using the path actions a lot more and in more interesting ways. And also just the stories being a lot more compelling up front and a lot more, I want to say interesting because... But they were more interesting. I felt like a lot of the base Octopath 1 stories were very like dry, standard rote starts that then turned into interesting stories. And a lot of the Octopath 2 stories were interesting from the jump. And that game still had some issues. I think there's some pacing in the middle of there that gets kind of, you know, they could have tightened it up a little bit. But largely that game is... If Baldur's Gate 3 had not come out this year, I think Octopath would still probably be my favorite RPG of the year. It is absolutely stellar. Exactly what people who have wanted an old style RPG with some new ideas. And that also, if we can play the Game Awards rule where December to December counts.
Chained Echoes.
Yeah, Chained Echoes. Huge one. A game I still think about routinely.
I'm not giving Jeff Keighley the satisfaction of having that count.
But I do like Chained Echoes a lot. It's one I'm still thinking about right now. And even as I, you know, we're getting near the part of the year where I have to start thinking about what my game of the year list looks like and what my award nominations would look like and things like that. Chained Echoes is in my mind. So
see a star as well.
I was not expecting Starfield to maybe have a shot at not making my top 10. Like, I'm playing it. I've now come around to enjoying it at this point, but not without a lot of effort. I still have a ton of misgivings about it. I figured that even if it wasn't all that, that I would like it and that it would be like a top 5 kind of game. And it turned out to be a fairly frustrating experience.
Right. For me.
Even though in the end, I think I'm going to end up being like, okay, this is fine, I guess. Yeah.
I'm sad I haven't been here for this cat tries to force herself to love Starfield.
It's
arc.
Been quite sad,
I've
Eric.
Been missing it. Because I was talking to someone the other day as we were working on some day job stuff. And I was reflecting on just how like forgettable the companions of Starfield are. I was trying to remember what any of their defining character traits are, and I was just like, I don't know.
Their defining character traits is Russian, kind of British, kind of, I don't know.
One of them
has a kid and a cowboy hat.
Well, but all of them, I think the thing that brought it to mind was I was editing something and it was talking about how your companions would get mad if you chose the like bad option here. And it was like universal across the board. All of them would be like, you shouldn't have done that. I disapprove of that. It just made me think of how in Baldur's Gate 3, I'd do something messed up and it would be like, Karlock disapproves, then Astarion greatly approves. He's like, yes.
Astarion's thrilled.
Yeah.
Whenever it says Astarion's happy, I'm like, oh, shit. I chose the bad option.
I did something messed up here. So, I did
well, not only
wrong.
That, Baldur's Gate 3, there are options you can choose where companions will straight up leave. I had a early on, I actually pissed off Gale so much that he left.
How did he piss off Gale?
Well, he confided about the bomb in his chest. Uh-huh. And mm-hmm. I did the mind ready thing to figure out what the bomb. He confided about needing to eat artifacts.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the hell is going on with you? So I was trying to read his mind and figure out what the heck was going on. And he discovered that I was reading his mind. And he was like, why are you reading my mind? And then we got into an argument and then he left.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, okay, I'm going to reload now and not do that.
I wonder if that's why the Gith chick never came back to me. She just left, I think, and I just never saw her
y'all
again.
Y'all don't have Lazelle. Oh, my God.
I don't have Lazelle.
Lazelle left
Lazelle
your party?
Is Basil, all right?
Like, I've never seen Lazelle. I swear, I don't remember what I did. I must have seen her when she crashed, or I forgot to rescue her or something. But either way, she's not in my party, and she's not in anywhere that I can find.
There are an alarming number of people who miss characters. I know someone else I know didn't have Gale for the longest time
because
they just didn't. Yeah, they just didn't go and pick up.
Didn't go that direction.
But this is what I'm talking about: is that we talk about forced love for Starfield, and it immediately turns into how good is Baldur's Gate 3?
Yeah.
Okay. Can I say
some better?
Can I say some nice things about Starfield, though?
Yes. Say nice things about Starfield.
I do love the shipbuilding.
Yes.
I've been having, I can spend a lot of time just in that shipbuilder menu. I'm really happy with my ship now. Having put together all of the habs and everything, I have found some really good quest lines. I think the Vanguard and the Crimson Fleet quest is, it's clear that they put a lot of time and effort into that one. Still has a few flaws, but generally speaking, it's a big cut above a lot of the other stuff. I'm actually rounding into liking the story, and there's a Star Trek quality to it that I appreciate. The whole multinational group coming together to explore space and discover the possibilities of the universe is like, it's catnip with a K. So, and I called the big twist at the end from a million miles away. As soon as people said there was a twist, I was like, I know what it is. And sure enough, that's exactly what it is. But I still like it. So I'm rolling through. I'm just taking it for what it is. And ultimately, Starfield is good. Is it enough to be on my top 10? Maybe not. But I do
not
think,
near like this. Yeah,
this
I do think
good.
In true Bethesda fashion, modders will turn Starfield into something truly special.
Sure.
I do think that they will take the raw material that has been put here, especially when it comes to the shipbuilding, and the exploration, which is bad in the base game, but I bet will be amazing after modding. I can't wait to see what modders do with this game. I bet it would be great. So that's all. Okay, let's move on to the next question. Clue asks, what defines a truly great RPG boss battle? And the first thought that came to mind is, if a unique soundtrack kicks in,
yes.
And it's a kicking yeah. soundtrack and it's super high mm-hmm. energy, you know you've got a great boss battle going.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Unique boss track is always the sign that it's a good
especially
fight.
If it's vocalized.
Oh, I mean, are we just jumping ahead to the next entry? Is that what we're doing?
Yes.
No.
I will also say that, so I've been playing a lot of Chrono Trigger recently and really loving the boss fights in that game specifically.
They're so good. They're like puzzles, right?
They're puzzles. And I was talking about how on the streams, and you can watch the VODs on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/bloodgodpod, if you want to watch them or watch them on Twitch. I'm plugging them because we're probably nearing the end, actually. I'm actually pretty close to the end of Chrono Trigger at this
hell
point.
Yeah.
Like Chrono Trigger is not a super complex battle system. It's a really straightforward battle system where you have not a ton of different things that you're having to juggle in your mind. I've been fascinated by the fact that like you really don't have a lot of tools that you're working with. It's how those tools interact and work with each other, and the decisions that you're making because of them make them really interesting. And I think the bosses reflect that very well, where I get into fights where it's like, okay, I've got these different things I need to attack. I just fought a Lavos spire or
Lavos spawn.
Yeah. And that one was really interesting because I was so used to just dumping AoE techs mm-hmm. on enemies. And this like mini boss would shoot this really powerful AoE attack at me if I hit one part of it. So I couldn't yep. just dump AoE techs. So now I was having to think about, okay, what are my good single target techs? What are my good things that can handle just one part of this boss? Or in other cases, when I was fighting the twin golems, I needed to put them on it because they would copy the magic that I used on them and then use magic back in kind. So I needed to keep them on a specific kind of magic that I could handle, as opposed to physical or shadow would absolutely wipe me.
Yeah, physical. I know what you're talking about. Physical will absolutely destroy you.
Yeah, and it was really cool to play those fights and see how even with a relatively simple setup and system, a not very in-depth system, Chrono Trigger creates really interesting combat situations that ask you to think about the things you're doing, act with intentionality, and solve them. And I think that is the hallmark. Is it's not just a gimmick. It is a thing that makes you see the combat system in a new light and understand it and feel like you have beaten something both like logically and with your gameplay and all that. It's a really cool feeling that I've really, really enjoyed. And that would be the hallmark of that. And I would also say the Baldur's Gate 3 has a lot of moments like that where you can... Sure, you can like fight enemies and just kind of like meat block them down if you want to and just kind of hit them with stuff until they go down. But a lot of bosses, a lot of encounters in that game feel so designed that they have ways of getting around them, even if it's you're using role playing to set yourself up in a more favorable position for the fight or something like that. I like boss fights that reflect the game systems and put them in their best light and reward you for engaging with the game systems.
I agree. And I like a good boss fight. I like a game that forces me to consider different party compositions as I approach mm-hmm. the boss fight. I think Bravely Default 2 actually did an amazing job with this, where it encouraged me to be like, okay, I'm getting wiped really fast. I need to completely rethink my job class comp right now. And so it encourages you to explore a lot of the tactical possibilities. On the flip side, I think a boss fight that I don't like are the ones that A, drag on too long.
Yeah.
And B, yeah. are just damage sponges where I'm doing yeah. the same loop over and over and over again. I do like a lot of thought and intentionality going into a boss encounter. I do like boss fights. I know I'm also in a good boss fight when I hit the second phase and all of a sudden they like throw off their cloak or something, or like go into bigger and stronger and get a bigger sword, and then the music changes, or they call in their mooks.
Yeah, I like boss fights that make my heart race, and boss fights where the boss has been built up as a really dangerous thing, and then all of a sudden you're like shoved against him, like have fun. I'll probably always cite Luca Blight from Suikoden 2 because that's not just. That's a real knockdown, drag out fight, but not in, like, as you were saying, Kat, the bullet spongy way. Like, he has his mooks, he has his magic, and then you have to go one on one with him. And you have, like, that one. If you know what to do, you know what to do. And, like, you're kind of going story based, like, what choice you should make here. But if you make the wrong choice, it's like it all comes down to that moment. And having struggled to beat him and then to come down to this point where it's like, oh my God, it's hand versus hand. What do I do? That was, like, an experience I'll never forget. So I like those kinds of, I like boss fights also that are theater, which is probably why I like FF14 so much, because so many of the boss fights are just, they're perfectly scripted in that regard, like story-wise. So I've always kind of appreciated that. But yeah, I like boss fights that are exciting, both like, you know, in terms of mechanics and in story-wise.
I like narratively significant boss fights for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
You've been waiting for a while to go head-to-head with them. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, here we go. It's time.
Yeah, it's not a fake out this time. We're actually doing this.
Yes, we're actually throwing down. I will say that classic Final Fantasy, 16-bit Final Fantasy, was really good at introducing boss fights that were real bangers, right? I'm thinking I was thinking about Atma Weapon in Final Fantasy VI.
That's such an epic.
Awesome soundtrack, like boss fight coming at an amazing time in the game. Mm-mm. I'm not spoiling anything, Eric. Mm-mm. Just saying. And the sprite is amazing too, and very, very imposing. So that stands out. And then in Final Fantasy IV, when the four fiends show up,
yeah,
and that again, unique soundtrack, very tough opponents. All of them have interesting kind of mechanics going for them. I think that a quality boss fight is like the underpinning of a great RPG. You know that you're playing a quality RPG when the mechanics and the flow are so good that you are having really memorable boss fights, because that's when the whole game comes together. It's like the full expression of the mechanics, in my opinion.
Yeah,
for sure.
And to add on one more thing, I there are many, many series that handle boss fights well, but one that always comes to mind for me is the Like a Dragon series, because there is nothing more hype than the dudes ripping their shirts off to reveal their back tattoos, and then they like clash, and then it just like shoots their name across the screen, like really epic text, and you're just like, let's go.
And I love, like, it. No, it does get you hyped for sure.
It's like
the tattoos are what give them their power.
The back tattoos, that's when you know it's getting serious. And like a Dragon 7 also has some absolutely ridiculous boss fights. The crane with the wrecking ball comes to mind, and yeah, those are just great for the sheer ridiculousness of what is happening in front of you. And I love games that don't take themselves too seriously and do have those moments of, yes, you are really fighting this thing. I mean, the ghost train or whatever is also a famous example of, like, you are fighting a train now.
Sammy J9 wonders, what is the favorite individual game game song of the year so far? Mine is either Song of Hope from Octopath Traveler 2 or Within the Dream from A Space for the Unbound. Although if I listen to that one, I'm likely to start sobbing uncontrollably. My favorite game song of the year comes during Act 3 of Baldur's Gate 3. I'm not going to say anything else other than the fact that it contains the lyrics hell. Mm-hmm. And
I'll look for it.
Yes, it is. Gets your heart racing. It's an awesome boss fight, and keys into the, how do you know you're playing a really good ass boss fight? It's when you have the unique soundtrack with the vocalized music, and so you know when the game developers are going hard. Yeah, so that's That might be my favorite game song of the year, but I know that Octopath Traveler 2 had some really
some real bangers
in there.
It has like the best motif, I think, because that like da 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 is like such a good like running theme for that series that they repeat over and over and over again.
It's really well established already. It's only been two games.
Yeah. But I think individual music, I keep coming back to Baldur's Gate 3, but not that one. I know why. I know that one's good. That one is good. But it's the repeat use of, I'm a sucker for motifs. And so the repeat use of the down, down, down by the river and all that. Mm. Like I love the way that game uses those little like musical hits and intonations really, really well. I would say, again, Chrono Trigger, because every time I'm walking on the overworld map and I hear that bum, 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 and I'm like, that's so nice. Time music.
Yeah.
Do you know that the down by the river thing is tied to a very different Baldur's Gate 3? Like, they completely changed a certain aspect of Baldur's Gate 3's story through cut content. Completely reimagined how the dream visitor was going to work.
Oh yeah.
And honestly, reading how they were originally doing it, I kind of prefer it to what they ultimately came up with.
The dream visitor stuff was different even in the early access, and that's why I think it's interesting to play the full release if you've played the early access, because that stuff is completely different.
Character designs were totally different, like seeing original Karlach versus what they eventually came up with.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting. It's interesting to see that, but I really love Baldur's Gate 3. I actually think Final Fantasy 16 had some banger music tracks.
It did.
Yeah. That's Soken for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Soken did some work on that. The Typhon fight was great. The one that plays during big ol' Rocky Mountain. It's fantastic. Just some really good musical hits that I think people didn't like notice right away because they're playing what is honestly, I'm going to say, is just an action game. It's an action game, but it's got some great musical hits in there that I really, really liked. And then Octopath. I love every time like Particio's theme kicked in with all the sax. It was so good. Oh, it was so good.
That could easily take my song of the year. But this year has been so crazy for FF14's raids. Like
yes,
they have theater music. Like this is actually stuff that you can make a musical out of. And for me, I think it's dedicated to Moonlight.
Yes.
Which is the song that plays when you battle Minfina, who is the goddess of my patron goddess. Thank you very much. I have a moon cat. and what I love about Dedicated Moonlight, besides the fact the violins just shred, is the fact that it's the song. It explains part of the Keeper of the Moon culture, which is, you know, you have the cat boys, of course. You have the Seekers of the Sun, which are the popular ones, and the Keepers of the Moon, which are my losers, who I love. And this is a song that talks about, like, their culture, finding love, how, you know, they're kind of a polyamorous society. So it's kind of like, you know, going out and basically losing your virginity. It's a song about that, but it's so good. And just everything Soken has done with the raid music, like the remixes of the Final Fantasy IV music, holy shit. Like, oh my God. I don't care if you like FF14 or not, look up the remixes of the Four Fiends music. They got the original guy who did those like parody videos way back when of the Four Fiends, who also died, can't beat Airman. I can't remember his name, but he helped with the music and oh, so good. Same with the Another Moon music. Like, just Soken's insane. So is the sound team. The whole sound team's great.
Spooky Man BR wants to know, what are the plans for the next media special? After Kat's Summer of Gundam and Eric's Autumn of Avatar, it's time for Nadia to take the lead.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I've been saying this, and I don't know if we're going to do this or what the plans are. I really want to do a Gravity Falls watch. I think Gravity Falls is one of the best cartoons ever done.
I respect it.
That's
and it's
fair.
Very short. It's a few seasons. Like, and it's got J.K. Simmons.
Oh, see, that's how you sell me on it, is you say J.K. Simmons, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked the idea of doing the Ghibli watch.
Ghibli watch is good too. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
if we're going to do a series, I want to do Gravity Falls.
So like pick the essential Ghibli films or we could all pick one Ghibli film that everybody has to watch.
Yes, but I still want to do Gravity Falls.
You can also do Gravity Falls, Nadia.
Thank you.
Nadia's earned this, all right? Nadia
has earned.
We got
this.
Our turns. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's true. Gravity Falls, it's, everybody.
It's very much my kind of show. It has my energy. Mabel is me.
So would it be Fall of the Falls?
Fall of the Falls.
Fall of the Falls. There we go.
Gravity Falls, Fall. Gravity Falls, Fall.
Gravity Falls.
Gravity Falls.
You gotta have the Z on the end so you know it's cool.
Just Gravity Fall. Yeah, there
I
you
like
go.
That. Gravity Fall. But
Gravity Fall.
Yeah, I like that.
We're really getting stuck on this.
But so I like
there
that.
There you
idea.
Go. Gravity
Thank you for
fall.
Bringing it up.
Wawa wants to know, Shiba Inu is going to speedrun Gyromite at AGDQ 2024. In a perfect world, what animal video game speedrun combination would you want to see?
Oh my god, that's a weird question.
I'm thinking a possum. I think a possum would be a very enjoyable combination. And then I think a possum could play an RPG.
Huh? I think...
Them like banging out menu commands.
I think a crow. Crows are extremely smart. Like, I have crows that hang around my place, and you watch them play. They don't play like animals. They play like humans. It's really creepy, but I think they'd be great at video games. I think they could learn them quite easily.
I want to see otters speedrun Mario Hoops 3-on-3.
What a weird choice.
Very specific, I know, but there's something about otters. They're just playful. They're
I love
fun.
Otters.
They like to, you know, I've always liked to imagine an otter would like playing basketball if they had water basketball.
They do. That someone trained a sea otter to kind of throw a ball through a hoop. It's very cute.
And see, that's just adorable. So I would love to see that. One thing I don't want to see involved at all: dolphins. Dolphins unsettle me. So
you don't like dolphins? I love dolphins. I know they kill me. But I love dolphins.
No, they're messed up. They're weird.
Yeah,
they're the little freakos of the sea, and they need to we have our land, they have their ocean, and we need to create the divide. All
How
right.
How do you feel
Eric
about orcas?
Known dolphin hater?
Mm-hmm. I like orcas.
Not dolphin hater. I'm not against
We've
their
We've now established that Eric is racist against dolphins.
No, dolphins can continue to exist. I just don't want them near me.
Look, I just believe in segregation of dolphins and humans, okay?
Like, we have the land.
Separate but
they
equal.
Have the ocean.
They can be in the ocean. We can have the land. There's just something about dolphins that I don't like, says
dolphins
Eric.
Are assholes.
They are
dolphins
assholes.
Are assholes. They like murder for fun.
Oh, yes. Here we go. Not all dolphins. Hello.
I can't believe
orcas?
This is happening to me.
I'm trying to talk about orcas.
Yeah.
See, orcas are really smart and they're assholes, but they know it. Orcas are us in water form. So, and what's really interesting about orcas is outside of that terrible, terrible sea world incident where basically the whale was driven insane by loneliness, they don't hurt humans. They don't kill humans. Like, they fuck up our yachts and they fuck up our fishing stuff, and we deserve that. But if you look at videos of orcas, they just kind of come near us and like hang out and look at us. And I was reading about a indigenous tribe that had a deal with orcas where they'd fish with them. And they'd fish baleen whales, and the orcas would get the tongue and the lips. And if they broke that covenant, which of course the settlers did, they would go away, and they did. So they're cool. Orcas are really awesome. I really wish we could, like, you know, it'd be cool if we could talk to animals. I really want to talk
chill.
To animals, spell.
They're working on it.
I know.
It might not be long before we're able to talk to dogs. I mean, we kind of already can, honestly.
It's almost time for second dinner.
Robo Riley wants to know, how have video games changed how you see or appreciate other parts of your life, whether it be other storytelling mediums, the news, crosswords, nature, or anything else? The most recent one for me is Final Fantasy XIV in the Night Sky. It's gorgeous in Final Fantasy XIV. It makes me sad that I live in a place with some really bad light pollution. I'm not really into camping, but now I want to visit a place where I can see the stars.
You know, I always appreciated a good campfire, but I feel like RPGs just really emphasize for me that campfires are the best. You just have a good little fire pit with your friends around it, and you rest and recuperate from the day. I appreciate a good campfire now. I know it's a very specific and weird thing, but I love a good campfire. This is a really good question.
It is a good question, but I have to think a little bit about it.
I mean, so I think playing a lot of this might not even be like RPG specific, so sorry, but I think a lot of games like Return of the Obradin and Outer Wilds are really good in that they help me like understand how I process information. Like they're games that kind of force you to think logically and understand the info that you're seeing and take them in. And I've noticed that the way I play games is different now post Return of the Obradin, because it makes you take like stock of your immediate surrounding. And I've noticed a lot of people can tend to kind of autopilot through things, you know, video games or even life, you know, where you just kind of like go through the motions and you don't like take notice of what's around you, what's near you. And I think games like Return of the Obradin really made me start to like, oh, there's a lot of detail in the things we do. And for games that can help with like, oh, I'm better at puzzle solving now in games because I'm better at noticing like the ways in which designers are trying to key me into a specific thing that I need to solve or like a clue or a hint. But even just in life, I take stock of things more often. I try to like have moments where I will just kind of like take in where I'm at and be like, you know, just be in the moment for a little bit. Like take almost a snapshot of where I am, especially if I'm like on a trip, I'm traveling, I'm somewhere really cool. I want to like have some time where I'm not just constantly thinking about like, okay, what's next? Oh, I should take a picture. Oh, let's go over here. Let's do this. It's just take a moment to like be where you are and take it all in and like internalize it. And I think games like Obradin really like helped me get to that place mentally.
I think games have been an incredible example of soft power for Japan, because it has given multiple generations of people around the world a lasting appreciation and a desire to visit and spend time in Japan. Mm. I ended up learning Japanese because of games and anime, and I lived there for a time, partly because, at least a little bit, because of games. And one way or another, I think that my appreciation for Japan and Japanese culture is inextricably tied to games, because so much of Japanese holidays, Japanese customs, Japanese everything is tied directly into video games. Even playing a game like Super Mario Wonder, that is a Nintendo effing game.
Oh, it totally is. Great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is very, very Japanese. So I think that is had a significant impact on my life, actually, and how I see the world.
Personally, I think video games helped me become a writer, not even just a better writer, just a writer. Mm. And that is because I started playing video games even as early as Super Mario Brothers, like for their story. Like, even though Rescue the Princess is not much of a story, it's still a goal. And you start to wonder, you start to supplement stuff in your head, like, how did this happen? How did she get kidnapped? Who were her parents? You know, all that weird stuff. And the thing with video games is that it tells stories with different mediums kind of bombarding you at the same time. You hear music, you see graphics, and usually you read or you hear dialogue. And having that kind of versatility with storytelling and having that all kind of funneled into you at once can be a really good way to learn how to tell a story through different, you know, different mediums yourself. Like, maybe I'll try switching the narrative here. Maybe I'll try a different perspective there. And to be honest with you, video games can also teach you what not to do, because sometimes the writing in video games isn't great. So you say to yourself, okay, well, I'm going to kind of not do that. And I'm not trying to be snobbish about it. I'm just saying, like, sometimes writers are not really in the budget. But I would advise, I think that, like, you know, they say things like, oh, comic books will rot your mind, video games will rot your mind. They really don't. They can't. They're, no matter what happens, you're getting information pumped into your head. You're getting a story, someone else's ideas pumped into your head. And that will always develop into something of your own. So, yeah, video games, they were my favorite way of imbuing stories outside of, I think even more than reading books when I was a kid, or definitely more than watching movies. So it turned me into a kind of a writer and a storyteller.
Video games also changed how I look at sports.
I guess they would.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I played everyone's a lot little of, and chibi.
Well, I played a lot of Madden, and I'm back to playing now Madden now, actually. I'm in my league. And it taught me about the strategy of the football. Like, I didn't know what a cover three was versus a cover two versus man coverage versus, you know, all of that defensive jargon I learned because of Madden. And similarly, I am a West Ham supporter in soccer because of FIFA. I picked West Ham because they had a goofy ass name and they were in the championship at the time and I wanted a challenge. And so I was playing them in FIFA and that's how I got to know their names and their culture and everything. And that's what made me an actual fan. And I would venture to say there are not insignificant number of Americans who became fans of individual teams because they enjoyed playing as them in FIFA. So I think that sports games at their best have been a very good educational tool about learning how to play, learn how to enjoy the sport in a way that maybe I wouldn't have otherwise. So Minofsky wants to know, with EZ8 receiving a novel adaptation recently, which RPG would you want to receive a novel adaptation?
I'll be honest, a lot of the novel adaptations I read are not very good.
You didn't like the World of Power? You didn't like the...
I'm talking about the ones that adapt things directly, like...
The novelization of Ninja Gaiden?
Well, that was amazing, except for the fact that his father didn't die, which was the whole point of the story.
I need to read the novelization of Death Stranding because that exists.
Oh, please do.
And
that
I really
like want
to read it. Yeah, that sounds so bad that I want to read it.
You
didn't like the Gears of War novelizations?
Here's the thing, though. Like, you're talking about there's Western novelizations and there's Japanese novelizations.
Yeah,
I find
Japanese
novelizations are a lot more dry than the Western ones, for better or for worse.
Well, so the one thing I will say is that there's also different kinds, because if you do like a light novel adaptation where the format's a bit more in the light novel form, I haven't read a ton of light novels, but I've read a few, and those are a little bit more, they're good in a way that's like very, I would compare it to like watching Riverdale here, where like you are kind of buying into a genre that will have tropes and that will have like kind of fun, enjoyable things. And the light novels I've read, I wouldn't say are like anything incredible by like a writing standard, but they are very enjoyable to read.
Right.
It's like the genre paperbacks that we have here in the US, where you buy like a cowboy paperback or like a romance paperback. They're just like, they're all the same size, and you kind of like are buying into like, oh, I'm getting an isekai light novel. It's like getting a romance paperback.
Right. Okay.
And I think if you go that route, there are some games that I could see making excellent versions of like specifically like fiction genre light novel, and I want to say like maybe a Lunar could do that really
well. That would be fun
because it would just be cheesy, it would just be fun, it would just be enjoyable. And that's what I don't think you're going to get. Like, I think games are so entrenched in their, a good game is so entrenched in the medium in which it's told, that like if you tried to novelize certain parts of it, it just wouldn't work very well.
For sure.
Even more difficult, because like you can kind of do a video game to movie adaptation and be fine, but like video game to book does not work as well. But
yeah,
if you pick the right subject material and you approach it with the right mindset, I think you can have some fun with it. So
the only
Live
one,
Alive, that's a good pick
that
from Sardin in the chat. Live Alive is a good pick.
Like an anthology. That'd be fun.
Yes. It'd be excellent.
There's a Final Fantasy IV novelization that I don't think anyone has translated. I would love to have that. I think there's an After Years one too, for some reason. I'd love to have that as well. It's illustrated.
There's a bunch of like Nier side works too that I want to get around to at some point.
That must be nice and sad.
Yeah.
I like when certain games get turned into manga.
The
Pokemon manga is actually very good.
Very good.
Which one? There's several. Are you talking
about the
OGs,
like the original Pokemon Red and Blue?
Yeah.
Very different from the anime.
Yeah.
Much more faithful to the actual games. And I think Pokemon Origins or something like that actually ended up following more in the lines of the manga. Also,
I liked Origins. I needed more than four episodes.
Also, the various Zelda manga, like the Link to the Past one in particular that came out in Nintendo Power.
Yes.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
We have a whole episode on that over at Retronauts. Go listen to it.
Yeah. I was looking into this because while I was traveling, I walked into a manga store because I can't help myself. And apparently the Elden Ring manga is pretty decent. I've been hearing some okay things about it. So I've been meaning to check that out at some point.
I've seen
which, I mean,
an an Elden Ring joke manga, which was hilarious. That got translated. But it was just like not at all serious, but it was official and just started with the shit. What do you call the protagonist? He has like a title.
The Tarnished?
The Tarnished. It just starts with the Tarnished being buck naked and Torrent finding him. It's like, are you sure this is the guy? All right. So it was pretty funny.
It's, oh, okay. So there's an anime that's airing this season that is like several manga deep at this point, I think, but it's, I think it's called Shangri-La Frontier, but the setup is basically like, what if Let Me Solo Her played a different MMO and like played an MMO. And it's not like exactly ripping off Let Me Solo Her, but it is like a dude that is so good at video games that he's trying to beat the next great MMO by wearing like underwear and a bird hat. And it's very interesting. I've been seeing some people talk about it, but yeah, no, it's there's good stuff out there. I do think the manga adaptations, though, you're right, tend to be a little bit more in line with what you would want out of those.
It's a very visual medium, I think. Yes. And so that fits maybe better into manga. And then, I mean, of course, in those particular, and I'm talking about movie adaptations, I'm talking about novelizations, manga, they lose the interactivity part.
Yeah.
Which is especially a big part of RPGs. I was going to say, well, what about a Disco Elysium novelization? Well, I mean, you lose a huge part of the appeal of the way that the different decisions interconnect and end up defining your path in that game. It's just, it would end up feeling kind of two-dimensional in its own way. But finally, Ruka wants to know, we're coming up on the third anniversary of Axe of the Blood God going independent. Can you believe that? Wow. Year 4 of Axe of the Blood God. Is there anything you wish you had done differently now that you know how it's going? And do you have any big shakeups planned for the future?
Think replacing the whole staff with dogs.
I mean, there's not too much that I would do differently. I mean, I think that it took a while to get the Pantheon kind of into a format that I ended up liking. It took a bit to find the current format of the show. I am really glad we got Eric on the show relatively quickly because it helped take a big load off Nadia and I, and it, I think it solidified the show in a lot of ways. So as for what to look ahead to, I think next year is the year that we really do launch the live show. The Saturday morning live show on Twitch, because we've had so much success with the Stars of Destiny here in the Discord that we really want to bring it to everybody. And
but you still get the after show, so don't worry.
Yeah, we're trying to figure out a way in which we do this without, because we are also very conscious of the fact that like when we do stuff like that, it shifts away like benefits that y'all have had to everyone. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to be conscious of like how that shifts too.
I think the star, they'll still get the pre-show and the post-show.
Yeah.
I think they'll still get like individual gifts. They'll still get, we'll still do watches. Like if we do the Summer of Ghibli, probably we would do a watch along.
You meant physical watches. And I was like, Kat, I thought we were just doing pins. Watches are expensive.
Axe of the Blood God Rolex.
they all fall apart in the mail.
No, like we would do watch alongs of, for example, if we did a Studio Ghibli, Summer of Ghibli, we might watch a movie together with the Stars
of
Destiny.
We did that once with like, what was
with
it? The
Char's Counterattack. Yeah.
That didn't go super well, but I think
we do owe a Spirits Within watch along as well.
We do owe a Spirits Within.
Oh, shit, right.
Yeah.
We should do that. we definitely want to do that before the end of the year. But
yeah,
exactly. Live Pantheons, that's an interesting concept, and actually it would be kind of fun to do a live Pantheon for the Stars, but only the Stars.
I think that would be a
good replace, maybe like a good bit of replacement content. I think the point is that it's such a great way for us to be able to expand our audience. As so many podcasts have a video component now.
They really do.
It would allow us to export them over to YouTube. Eric has been learning a lot of the video production stuff through the through our various charity streams. And we need to learn that. And then it would make it a lot easier to have a stronger social media component, especially since Twitter is fucking dying.
Twitter is so effed.
Yeah, it's
just beyond effed.
It's screwed. I have to curse because of how much Elon has screwed up a platform that I used a lot previously. So having a video component for Instagram, TikTok and whatnot.
Especially TikTok. We all need the TikTok clips.
I think the thing that we always come back to with that to like air out some of the inside talks that we have probably at least like once a month is that obviously this is varying extents of our lives, right? Like we have like different day jobs or work that we're doing on the side. Like Blood God is not everything we do in the way that some other podcast networks, some other podcast content makers. Yeah.
Hence the extended absences for Eric and I at points.
Yeah. And look, sometimes life stuff happens too. And so we have to like be conscious of like how much we can put on our, you know, respective plates and how much we can handle. And so that's why we are kind of like, we test the waters a little bit. A lot of my Twitch streaming stuff has not just been because I want to play Chrono Trigger with y'all, but because we wanted to see what it looks like if that channel is live twice a week, like what kind of viewers show up, what kind of retention does it have? What are the peaks and lows? We look at, like, I've been watching the YouTube view counts and the engagement there to see what that looks like. It's just kind of us dipping toes in different things to see if there's a ripple that comes back or not. And I think definitely video is something that we're always looking to expand more into, like Kat was saying. But also end of day, like we just, the core of this is always going to be the show, right? It's going to be the weekly episodes and the Pantheon that kind of make up the core aspect, and also just the good vibes of this crew. I'm very thankful to have been brought on and to be a part of this. And it's such a cool experience. And on top of all that, like the Discord in a time where the Twitter is falling apart, like having the Blood God Discord to just hang out and chat in with like-minded people is really excellent. And
it's
that's
a fantastic effing Discord. I'm super
absolutely
proud of how it.
Yeah.
You're all cool. Together.
Yeah,
it rules. And so that is like, even as we look to build out, we try to make sure that like the core, the foundation remains, and we're true to that. So don't fret too much if you hear us doing a bunch of weird and wacky stuff, because that is like the core of what we want to do remains the same. We still want to be the number one independent RPG podcast out there.
Hell
so.
Yeah.
And I'm happy I'm happy to report that Axe of the Blood God has grown year by year. It's grown significantly since we first went independent. And I think that we can keep growing and keep pulling in people to the show and getting them to join our community. We were blessed with just an incredible year for RPGs this year. An all-timer. I don't know how you top this year, but even next year, you know, we get Rebirth. We're going to get Elden Ring DLC.
Infinite
God knows what
wealth,
else we'll see.
Baby, infinite wealth. I'm so excited.
We're going to get Switch 2 next year, probably.
I also, real quick, you know, all of us here on the pod do a lot of work, but Victor has also been a huge part of this year.
We brought Victor in. Yeah, he's been great.
Yeah, has been doing a lot of work behind the scenes that y'all might not have seen. And then also has been doing a lot of incredible work with the expanded Dropouts coverage that has been really cool.
By the way, if you haven't done it yet, go subscribe to Charlene Dropouts feed. You know,
yes, please. It
there
is
are free
on
episodes.
Feed.
There are free episodes as well as premium episodes. And it's good Final Fantasy 14 content. We're not that far away from another expansion.
From Dawn Trail,
just got a new trailer today for Dawn Trail.
Exactly.
Yeah. And shout outs to Mike for being another pillar in that respect. And like all the guests that we've had on that have been so generous with their time and helping out the folks that guested on the different charity streams. You asked, is there anything you wish you had done differently? I wish I'd remembered to set the VOD recording for the damn D&D stream. That's the thing. It's the one thing, if I could go back and change, it would be check the VOD setting before you do the D&D stream.
We've all had big screw ups like that.
But even that, we've had talks about what if we did some more D&D or tabletop or even
Baldur's
Gate 3 campaign. And
that'd be
so
fun.
There's a, there's a lot of stuff that we were talking about that's going to be really exciting. And it's been really fun to see the ways in which we grow and expand. And yeah, it's great. I love this.
Another thing that you can look forward to in 2024 is we're going to do a RPG music, RPG soundtrack pantheon type list. Yeah.
So
we're just okaying this live on air. I put in just don't forget this RPG music Thunderdome, and we're just clearing
it. We're doing it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we're doing it. It's going to be great. It'll be much in the same as like our Pantheon remake and the remake of the top 25 RPGs. We haven't done a proper list of the greatest RPG soundtracks. So it's time to build that list and do a big special around it. And I'm really looking forward to it. So yeah, those are some of the things that you can look forward to in 2024. I think we have a great show and we have a great community and we have a lot to look forward to. The show just keeps on growing, and I think that it's going to be better than ever next year. So
better than 10 Super Bowls.
10 Super Bowls?
10 Super Bowls. I don't want to oversell it.
All right, that's it for the mailbag. It's time now for a series of random encounters. Analog is tackling the N64 next with the Analog 3D. Paradox parts ways with harebrained schemes following disappointing sales for Lamplighters League. The PS5 release date may have been leaked. It could be coming out in November 10th. The next Final Fantasy XIV class is the Viper. You'll also be able to ride Torgal.
Yeah.
Torgal.
Torgal's a mouse.
Torgal's a mount, all right.
Torgal is the best thing to come out of Final Fantasy 16, full stop.
He's I don't disagree with that. Yeah. No, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and that's not even hate on Final Fantasy 16. I just like Torgal.
Torgal's a good dog.
Torgal's great. We love Torgal.
Very good dog. Great, great, great idea to have Torgal in there. Diablo 4 Season of Blood is now out. There was some technical difficulties that led to a very brief delay, but it's here now, and apparently it's good. I've seen actually a fair amount of praise for it online. I've been playing Diablo 4 on and off with supporter DJ Bagel Pups, so we could, Diablo 4, it's not so bad. It's not so bad. Aside from the very cynical monetization, it's not so bad. Still good.
It's still good. It's still good.
The same
it's just a little
arc
monetized.
As Diablo 3.
It's still good.
It's the same arc as Diablo 3 is what it's going to be. Yeah.
I'll wait for it to come on Switch, so I'll be like, oh, this is really cool. I enjoy it.
Slay the Spire dev releases Dancing Duelist, a free-to-play deck builder after ditching Unity. And finally, Phil Spencer says Activision Blizzard games aren't on Game Pass because of all the uncertainty around the buyout, so please look ahead to 2024. All right, we're rolling into the tavern now. It's time to relax, chill out, and talk about what we are playing. Eric, welcome back.
I have a game that I can finally talk about now. It's called Long Gone Days. I've been kind of poking at it on my Switch here and there. I've been traveling a lot, so it's been my travel companion game. And it is an indie RPG that you probably already own because it's been in a bunch of bundles and stuff over the years. The early access came out sometime around, like, I think the first time I played this game was in 2015 or something like that. And it has been in gradual early access and put into bundles and things like that throughout the years. Now it's finally out on consoles and PC. And the thrust of it is that it is an anti-war RPG. You play as a sniper who is part of a paramilitary, like raised as a child soldier, and then becomes disillusioned on their first dispatch and decides to go AWOL and expose the truth behind this big military conspiracy. But the game is very much about, number one, like realism, and not in like a, oh, it's super crunchy Rainbow Six tactical kind of way, but in that it's about real life. There are no fantasy elements. Your characters are all soldiers in various ways, or they fight however they are able to fight. It is a turn-based RPG where all the combat encounters are set. There are no random encounters. There are just specific encounters. And I think that's kind of an interesting concept because it forces you to really think about what you expend and what you have for each fight. And I think that's a cool idea.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say two things about this game. Number one, I don't think the combat system's that great. I'm going to get that out of the way now. Eat the vegetables first. I think it's novel in that it is a primarily like military driven combat system about targeting different parts of the body, kind of like a VAT system.
Right.
And so you can try to like hit the head, but you have like less chance to do it. But if you hit them, it'll do a lot of damage. Or if you hit their arm, you have a chance to paralyze them and make them miss a turn, things like that. You have different abilities, like the medic has a bunch of healing that they can do and can also take care of status effects. Or the assault character can just kind of shoot more. And that's kind of like the problem with this game, I think, in its combat system, is that it has interesting ideas for what the non-combatant characters can do. There's actually one character who is a conscientious objector who is like a pacifist, and so he cannot attack, but he can boost other characters' morale and heal them and bandage them and stuff like that. So he actually becomes a really interesting character in combat because of that. But then other characters are just kind of like, well, this character has a shotgun, so they can't hit like pinpoint targets, but they have a lot of attacks that do like other things. But I don't think it does anything interesting with that, or at least not enough interesting for me to care. The reason why I care, the reason why I think this game is worth playing, is that it is a wartime story about the effects of war on a civilian population. And holy hell, is that not extremely relevant right now?
Yeah, really.
And
yeah.
It is a very of the time game to play. And I think the writing is exceptional. I think the writing is very, very good. It tackles a lot of really complex topics. There's a character who had gone to live abroad and ended up getting like conned into almost into a trafficking scheme.
Damn.
And there's a character who is like, again, the conscientious objector, the pacifist. Seeing how they react to war is very interesting. Seeing how like communities are affected by an incoming invasion. Like there is an entire section where you're living in a town and you know that an invasion is like coming in the next few days, and you're seeing how all the population reacts to that. And you're doing these side quests to do things like help try to round up all the stray dogs and cats in town so you can get them all together and get them out before the invasion comes through and things like that. It's a very, very, I mean, it's like heavy. It's a heavy game to play, but I think it is a very relevant game to play. And I think if you want something that is, as it builds itself, an anti-war RPG in this time, it is fascinating for that. It is a really cool play for that. I wish the combat system was a little bit more interesting. I wish like the gameplay parts of it were a little bit more interesting, but the writing and the storytelling and the character designs are absolutely incredible. The art in this game is gorgeous. I think it looks fantastic. It's worth it enough if you want something different.
Can art, good art and a good story, save an RPG even if the combat system's a little boring?
I almost just let some real spicy slip. I don't believe it with my whole heart, but I do think people care more about the style and vibes of Persona than they do about the combat of Persona, because the combat of Persona is not nearly as intriguing as like the push turn stuff of Shin Megami Tensei or anything like that.
Persona 5 has some good moments.
Persona 5 is pretty good.
It's fine. It's got decent, it's got combat that serves the purpose it needs to serve, but I wouldn't say that like any of the combat challenges of Persona were as interesting as SMT or anything like that.
I'm looking forward to Persona 3 Reload because I think the boss fights and whatnot are much more intense.
Those were 4 and 5. The most. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. Mm-hmm.
And it does a good job of integrating the mechanics. I agree that the vibes and the music and the story and the characters are generally superior to the act.
Yeah, you play Persona for the vibes. Yeah.
But the other thing is that with the Persona games, so much of the enjoyment of the combat is in the demon fusion and getting a good stable of demons in your party. So I think it's not just the moment-to-moment combat, it's the preparation that goes into combat.
That's
well.
It for me, yeah.
Kind of. I still feel like SMT still does demon fusion better. Like, I gives agree. You more interesting reasons to want to fuse.
It's not as fun, though. I find it's a lot more fun in Persona.
I like the... What was the one we just did? Shin Megami Tensei Strange Journey. I thought the demon fusing in that was way more interesting because it felt more impactful in the ways I was doing it. In Persona, I didn't have to, like, pay attention to what I was fusing until, like... I think the cruise ship was the first time that I was like, oh, I need a team that can address this specifically. And beyond that, I was like, I don't like I'm just making demons and putting them together. And this works somehow. I think because you have other characters you can rely on for some of your elemental hits and things like that, you can get by in that game in a way that you have to, like, focus on the demons in Shin Megami Tensei.
You're not wrong, Eric. You're not wrong.
Yeah, no, I'm not dunking on Persona either. I love the vibes, to be clear.
I do think
stand SMT down.
I do think SMT is the better gameplay.
Long Gone Days is really, really good. I've been poking at some other stuff that I don't really want to talk about yet because I just haven't played enough of it. I did play some of that Spider-Man last night.
Spider-Man.
That's Spider-Man 2. They made another Spider-Man, and I personally like that a lot. It's a good Spider-Man. They did that. I'm kind of curious about the story. I think my biggest disappointment so far is it feels like Miles is taking a very B plot role to the A plot of Peter and his stuff. And I think that's kind of a bummer.
Supporting role?
Yeah. Like Miles, like Peter has a lot of stuff going on that he's dealing with. And then Miles is just like, I need to finish an essay. And that's like one of his main driving plots. And
the thesis on there and write your intro and write your body, write your end. You're good.
But I think the thing is that I've complained before about Sony first party games that I don't like stuff like Tsushima or Horizon or God of War because they all feel very samey to me. I think Spider-Man breaks that just by virtue of how good its traversal and, like, being in its world feels.
It's even fun to watch. Like, people are putting out videos, and I'm like, oh, yes, man, this looks just fun. Like, yeah. I agree with you. I'm not much of a Sony game person because I think they're just a little bit too polished and too perfect. But
too polished.
You know what I mean. Like,
you know what the problem with this game is? It's too good.
No, that's not really what I mean.
It's
where, like, everything feels tailor-made so that everyone will have a good time with it. But
there is no sicko.
There is no sicko energy. But Spider-Man, I can, like, sense a little bit of sicko in there. There's, like, a little bit of sicko in there. And it gets me through.
I'm not a Spider-Gal. I did enjoy across the Into the Spider-Verse films.
Those are good.
As a superhero, I find Spider-Man not objectionable. I never got around to playing the original. I played some Miles Morales. It was fine. I was not going to play Spider-Man 2, but then I got a code in my inbox. And I was like, I'll install this. And I watched the recap, and I'm like, I can vibe with this, I think. And so it's the kind of game that I definitely want to play on my TV rather than – usually I play on my computer monitor.
Yeah.
So I got it on my TV. And I'm going to roll with it and see if I end up liking it. Because I agree with you, Nadia, the clips that I've been seeing on social media makes it seem really appealing. I especially love the transitions between characters. They did the GTA 5 thing.
Yeah.
But in high speed. I think that's kind of cool. And the fast travel and... Also, this is weirdly the year of New York for me. I just got done reading this wonderful lesbian time travel rom-com called One Last Stop, which is set in New York. I spent 2 weeks in New York back in August. I've been to New York multiple times this year. So it does make sense that I finish off the year playing Spider-Man 2, which is just a really amazing recreation of New York.
Two other things that I want to highlight about Spidey that make it good. Number one, I love the cast of Spidey. I think everyone talks about how Batman has the best rogues gallery, but I would put Spider-Man up against Spider-Man. Batman. I would say those two. They're like tied for me. I like both of them, but Spider-Man's got...
Is there anyone who can match up to the Joker in terms of rogues
gallery? The Green Goblin.
Really?
I agree.
The Green Goblin
is like the Joker, but he flies around. He's a lot more fun.
Venom.
Spider-Man villains are fun. They're
even
a lot of
like
fun.
Like Kraven Venom in Spider-Man is so, 2 is a really good pick.
Venom is like, so 90s edgelord as a character.
Oh, but Kat, you got to get on board with sexy Venom. You got to get on board with hot Venom. It's look, these days Venom's not a freak. He's a little freak.
he's a little freako.
Yeah, no, Venom owns in this game, but you have Green Goblin, you have Vulture. I think Vulture's really
Vulture.
Fun. I love the Vulture's Michael great. Keaton Vulture so much.
Michael
like,
Keaton
I think that is...
Vulture is great, and Spider-Man Homecoming is low-key one of the best MCU films that's just a standalone that I can watch anytime,
It's
any
so
place.
Good.
It is good.
So good.
It's lovely. The other Spider-Man movies, I did not care for the most recent Spider-Man MCU film. Because yeah. It was just a whole lot of remember this. It was just one big tribute to the damn 2000s movies. Which
yeah, but mm-hmm. I do like Tobey Maguire, so I was kind of happy to see him. But I agree.
I like Tobey Maguire. Spider-Man 2 is a very great movie. I agree. Spider-Man 1 and 3, not so great. Just going to put
I
that out
liked,
there.
2 was great. 2 was a great movie.
The other thing that's really good about Spider-Man 2, the video game. At that Mango Old pointed out in the chat, it's got like small town, not small town, like small, like scale community vibes.
Right.
It's got that like friendly neighborhood Spider-Man vibe down. A lot of it helps that Spider-Man is not like constantly working with the cops in this game. It's a lot more like, honestly, Spider-Man helps out the firefighters and like the local communities and stuff like that. But especially between like Miles, who feels much more grounded in his community because of the way they built his story up in Miles Morales, and, mm-hmm. and the stuff you're doing in Spider-Man 2 feels very community driven. He helps out just local people that need help. And also a lot of the focus has now shifted to them using this app that they have where people can like put in requests for Spider-Man to help them out. It is so small town. Like small scale community vibes, like friendly neighborhood Spider-Man stuff that I think that's what made me like this character a lot way back when I didn't like most other superhero characters. I like Spider-Man because he was just wanting to help out in his neighborhood. And
he is very likable in that way. Very ground level. Can't hate for sure. So I've heard that the open world is very stock. A lot of fetch quests, that kind of thing. In some ways,
but the swinging is fun. I don't care
the
about
traversal,
there.
The traversal is fun.
Oh, the gliding wings are so fun. They're really smart. It was a really smart addition, and the way they're integrated is really, really smart. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. It's a beautiful looking game. So, mm-hmm. I will be playing this one now that I have a code. Another game that I'm playing now that I have a code is Super Mario Wonder. And I'll say some nice things, and then I'll say some things that annoy me.
Ooh.
Nice things. It's beautiful, especially compared to New Super Mario Brothers. I mm-hmm. love the Wonder Seed conceit where everything changes.
Everything gets cracked out.
Yeah, Mario gets all cracked out.
He touched Fuzzy. Now he's going to get dizzy.
Elephant Mario is okay. He's fine. I like the vibes more than the actual mechanics. It feels a little too heavy to me. I
like Fireball better. I grab that immediately.
I do like that there are multiple characters. The level design is decent. I wish that Mario didn't draw so much inspiration from OG Mario 1. I wish it drew more inspiration from Mario 3 and Mario World, because it feels like another evolution of the original Mario. I mean, obviously it has components of Mario 3, but on a moment-to-moment basis, especially World 1, I'm sure it gets a lot more intricate as you go. It's very straightforward, beginning to end kind of stuff. And
how
it feels
far are
like
you?
Mario
I'm not
1.
Very far.
The thing I'm that wondering. I like about Mario 3 is, A, you go into the sky a lot. There's a lot above your head and below your feet. And the levels do not feel like a point A to point B situation. They feel like a, I don't know, how would you describe it? A box where you can explore all of the different corners and then eventually get to the goal if you want. And I feel like Mario's lost that a little bit. 2D Mario's lost that a little bit. Like New Super Mario Brothers, borrowed heavily from the original Mario 1. And now that has been the course for 2D Mario for a while. And I think that Mario 3 and Mario World were much more interesting evolutions of it. I miss the mini castles and how intricate those were. I miss the ghost houses. And I sure hope that Mario Wonder has stuff that is equivalent to that as I continue. But
how far are you? Because I'm only...
I'm really not that far. I'm only like in World 1. So
yeah, so
I'm gonna take it with a grain of salt. It's just initial impressions.
Right. Right. Yeah. I'm playing it too. I haven't gotten very far. I'm playing with my husband. So I've been told apparently that the online component is incredible and I haven't turned it on yet.
The badges. I want to see what the badges are all about.
Yeah. I got one badge. I can't remember. Oh, right. It was the gliding badge. I got that already, which is pretty cool. But I want to see. I kind of miss the online component for Mario games. Like, I miss Miiverse so much. Like, do you remember people were going crazy with New Super Mario Brothers? I think it was the 3D one. Super Mario Bros. World, 3D World, and they were writing messages on the map screen like my mom divorced my dad and all this stuff. Instead of like, how do you find the mushroom in 1-1? It's like, oh, my mom hates me.
There's something about shit posting in a Nintendo forum that just feels really good.
It
you
attracted
know?
The weirdest shit posters
wholesome
too.
Wholesome shit
like,
posting.
Not even like draw her giving birth. Like that's what that meme came from. Like,
it took about 2 seconds for that to go off the rails. Kat's like wholesome shit posting in the Nadia and like frame perfect response.
But you don't get that kind of shit posting. You don't get the good water guy in normal communities. You don't get that guy who bought these games specifically to post 10 out of 10 water. And I feel this guy because I would have done the same thing. Just like, oh, here's cool water. I love water. I love swimming. Like this water looks cool. But I wouldn't buy all the games and like comment on every single one. Like, who does that? Nintendo people are weird. And I include myself.
The dude that was like super into Mewtwo and was really mad that every Smash game did not have Mewtwo in it Melee and was like, would rage about it all the time. I feel like that was an old GameFAQs like cryptid of like the dude who really wants Mewtwo back in Smash.
He just really wants Mewtwo.
That's all he wants.
Yeah, no. So I'll give Mario Wonder more time and I'm sure it'll be turn out to be absolutely incredible, but The last thing I was going to say is that I'm back on my Madden bullshit.
At least it's not FIFA.
At least it's not FIFA. No, I'm in an online league, which by the way, we have openings on our waitlist if you want to join. Just DM me for details, but it's a 32 team league and I was railroaded into playing the Arizona Cardinals. A team that I never think about. It's also one of the worst teams in the game.
No one thinks about that team ever.
I forgot
the team
they
doesn't
existed.
Exist.
Yeah. I forgot they existed.
This is the most I've thought about the Cardinals literally in years. Tiny little red birds, but I've kind of come to like them. Their uniforms are fun.
I love Cardinals. They're one of my favorite birds.
It's fun to be a bird team. So I can be like, caw, caw, while imagining that I'm a Cardinal. I've got Kyler Murray, who's very fun to play with. And I've won my last two games at the very last second. One was I was about to kick a field goal, and I did a fake field goal to get the winning touchdown and won the game.
There we go. Yeah.
Hell yeah. So I was like, I'm going for this. I'm going to win this game. And I did it. I threw it to a lineman in the end zone and they did the toe tap. It was hilarious. So you had this giant lineman doing a toe tap. And then the second game, again, I gave up a last minute touchdown because my defense is horrible because it's a horrible team. But I threw a pass down the seam for like an 80-yard touchdown pass down the seam with 30 seconds remaining to get the go ahead and beat the Browns, and that felt good too. So cardiac cards. I managed to go from 1-4 to like 5-4 now. So competing with the Seahawks to win my division. So having a good time actually. This Madden is not good. I would not recommend it, but
but it's cat approved.
That's always my problem is like I hear this and I miss because I used to play in this league as well. I was running the Browns for a little bit and I miss...
Well, hey, dude, get on the wait list. You can come on.
No, I miss so much of it, but I do not miss playing Madden. Like, I wish that game was better, because I just...
Honestly, this is the most fun I've been having playing Madden in years. And, but, the game itself is stupid still, but at least it's fun stupid as opposed to boring stupid.
I don't know. It's like I know that playing a game with friends can make a lot of bad games better.
It's true.
But there, and I did enjoy live streaming my Madden games, but I just, no, you can't drag me back in. Don't do this to me.
All right.
I'm just going to go play Pyre instead, the true best
sports
RPG. It's true.
We have a lot of other games, but this is, I'm back to practicing. I feel invested again. And hey, if you ever want to watch my streams, I'm on Cat Plays Madden. It's just a separate Twitch channel. It's mandatory that you have a Twitch channel that you can stream with. And I didn't want to stream from my regular Twitch channel. So Cat Plays Madden. All right, Nadia, sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. I was just going to say I'm still playing Baldur's Gate 3. I kind of got into the middle of the, the Gauntlet of Shar.
Mm.
And I started to go up against myself and I got creamed and I said, nope. So I went back and I decided to do some other stuff. Just kind of goofing around, having a great time. Nothing really major to report. Just kind of really finding spots I want to visit, going there, and then seeing what's up. I did rescue Thaniel, so I'm proud of myself for that.
That's a good side quest line. I like that side quest line a lot.
Except I said on Twitter, from now on, all hide and seek mini games are canceled. No more. They're gone.
So
they're done.
I was confused by what you meant by that, and I guess I just did something else in that situation, because I wound up doing like a combat encounter and then convinced the little gremlin child to work with me. And so I guess you can hide instead.
Like,
okay.
Basically he says, oh, let's play hide and seek. And I said, okay, fine. And if you have good perception, which I do, like you found him in 2 seconds behind a wagon. And he's like, okay, now we're going to play with mummy and daddy. And he brings up those stupid shadows, and the shadows have if they see you, they'll lure you into a fight. But to be honest, I always reset, because I thought that, I wanted to save Thaniel, but I thought if you fight, you'll piss him off because he killed his mom and dad. But I guess he'll join you if he kills his mom and dad.
Well, you can still complete that quest even if you do the fight. So,
okay.
But yeah, have you done, I want to make sure before you start doing too much gauntlet stuff, have you done the... Well, you've been to the inn, right? Yeah, you have to go to the inn.
I saved the inn. Yeah, I saved the inn.
Have you done the mountain pass?
I've done most of it. I didn't finish off the Gith Nest. I haven't done anything with Inquisitor yet.
You should go finish that stuff before you do anything in the Gauntlet of Shar. Yeah.
No, I've actually gone backwards and I said, you know what? I haven't done anything of the Underdark, so I'm going to do the Underdark.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Oh, do the Underdark, dude.
Yeah. Act one is broadly considered everything before you enter the Shadowlands. Mm-hmm. And then act two is just the Shadowlands, because it's like a pretty, as you've
it's
seen,
pretty
it's a pretty big area. But you should make sure you clear off all act one and act two stuff, because like I will tell you right now, is once you get to a certain point in the gauntlet, you will like lock off everything that came before. So,
oh, okay. So I'm going to go. I have a lot to do. That's not that. And I actually got a feeling like, hey, maybe I shouldn't be here yet. Game's pretty good at that. What is funny though, is I camp against two minotaurs and there's a narrow like hill and I've said, oh, I know what to do. And I greased the shit out of that floor. So all these cows are just falling over. Like, you idiots. And I'm just shooting them from a distance.
Classic counter to cows running uphill. Grease.
Animal. No, exactly. But one of them got passed and I was like, oh shit, because it was mad.
The ability to have conversations with animals is one of my secret favorite things in Baldur's Gate 3.
I talk to every animal. I made a druid subclass.
I enjoy talking to the cows in the Underdark. Make sure you do that.
I talked to a really fucked up cow. First it was the strange cow that shows you the weird Eric Cartman fucked up vision. Like, it was, and then I left it alone.
I love strange cow. Strange cow's got bad vibes.
Strange cow just says moo.
God, I love that game. You're making me want to play that game again. I'm probably, after this next game that I'm on for coverage, once I'm done with that, I think I'm gonna go back to my Dark Urge run and see that all the way through.
Because I might do that. Yeah.
Are we going to ever do a co-op campaign together?
I'm down for it.
I'm down. Can I use my character?
Are we going to wait for like Are we going to wait for like definitive edition and then play together?
Depends on like, it depends. But I think if we hit a point.
I think we should wait for a definitive edition so that we can really blow it out and have a good time. Nadia, you would have to roll a new character, unfortunately. I don't think
you have to roll new characters. But I mean,
we could all have fun coming up with like a great mix. We could decide who would be the fourth in our party.
We would argue over it every time.
There's really good Twitch hooks as well, where people can decide. People can decide dialogue checks and everything. We're going to have a great time if we do this together.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
No, I'm down for it.
I'm down anytime. Just let me
and
know.
And no reloading. Yeah, no safes coming.
No safes coming.
I think the rule would be no. We have to live with the roles, but that. I do think that there are certain moments like Last Light In that we should be able to reload.
I screwed that up the first time. Yeah, and I'm like, okay. I'm reloading.
We will make establish save scum parameters.
Yes.
Like if we lose an encounter and everybody dies, I'm going to be we should reload.
Yeah. I'm not rolling the party.
Yeah. But otherwise for a lot of stuff, I think that we should just roll with it in terms of the roles and such.
So to speak.
But, who gets forced into the talking too?
Another reason to wait for the definitive edition whenever it comes out, if it does, is presumably they'll be doing a lot of bug fixes on the co-op, which is still kind of broken, especially as you get into like Act 3 and that kind of thing.
I haven't played that far in the co-op campaign I currently have. I think we're still in like early Act 1 there, but it's been fine, but there have been a few moments of weirdness, and so
Rev's been playing with her husband Imran, and she says it's gotten quite gnarly as she's gotten
she mentioned that
deep into the game. All right, that's it for what we've been playing. Nadia, take us home.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Ein Doppelcheeseburger, eine Pommes und eine Cola für 4,99? Lohnt sich das überhaupt für Macs?
All das lohnt sich für euch. Die günstigen Mac Smart Menüs jetzt schon ab 4,99 bei McDonald's. Unverbindliche Preisempfehlungen nur in teilnehmenden Restaurants.
Before you came on, Kat, we were talking a little bit about like our schools and, you know, what they were kind of surrounded by. Eric said he was surrounded by football fields because Texas. Mm-hmm. I said I grew up in a city school that was surrounded by a lot of ravines that were technically off bounds, out of bounds, but we ignored that. I was telling Eric about this game that, well, I personally didn't play it, but a few kids did.
Allegedly.
One of the ravines kind of backed out into a rehab hospital, like where you're sent to if you had a bad accident. You go to the hospital, then you get sent to a rehab hospital to recover. And this place was staffed by nuns that were really angry all the time. And we'd kind of sneak onto the property, which bordered the property of our school. And they'd chase. Like, they knew how to give chase. And so we called it Nun Chase. And I never got caught. I never really did that. I never really did that that often, but I did know some kids who got caught. But I did in grade school, which was just kind of across the street from the other school I went to, that I also backed onto a ravine, and we all called it we went back there, which is strictly against the rules, and this is how smart we were. We went onto a hill and started howling like wolves, and I just remember in my mind's eye the vision of the teacher storming towards. We all got rounded up and taken to the gymnasium, and just there was a lot of us. Like, there was a real herd of us who had gone that day. I don't know what got into us, and we all got this huge ass lecture because, man, I guess if we had died, they would have been in a lot of trouble because the ravines have, you know, they have rivers, they have crazy people, they have animals, they have a lot of animals. Actually, we were warned not to tease the geese. Anything else that comes out, whatever, foxes, coyotes, ignore them, but. Don't tease the geese. So I was wondering, Kat, like, what did your school kind of border? Like, anything cool or interesting?
I'm literally posting pictures from my school in the Discord right now because I was just there. It's closed now, actually.
Really? Oh.
Yes.
No children.
Yeah, I just posted it into the Discord. This is what my elementary school looked like back in the day.
Oh, that's a nice big field.
Yeah, big field. It was a suburb. There was nothing around it. That was my elementary school, Sioux Trail Elementary. And it's closed because there's not enough kids in Burnsville where I grew up. And if you look inside, you can still see stuff from the pandemic.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, like 2020 cool stuff. Like they haven't finished clearing out. And if you look at the front, you can see that it's still kind of like overgrown.
I saw. That looks really creepy. I love
that. Yeah, it's really creepy, but kind of cool, actually.
I love nature reclaiming stuff. Is the property, like, is anything going to happen to the property or is it just going to be graffiti to death?
I think they're going to bulldoze it. Probably my middle school, which is nearby, Metcalf, it's going to get bulldozed and turned into a whole new development area. So it's going to be kind of an end of an era. I always found that school very grim, honestly.
Really?
Yeah. Metcalf was like, I think I just have bad memories of Metcalf in general, but it wasn't like the most, you know, attractive school or anything. But Sioux Trail, the other one was the hill in the back. And I'm standing at the top. And when I was small, I had tiny little legs. And so that hill felt very big to me. and we would go sledding down that hill during the winter.
Yeah, of course you would.
Which was a lot of fun.
I saw that and said, that's a good sledding hill.
It's a good ass sledding hill. And there would be, because they would plow the blacktop, you would have these huge snowdrifts.
Yeah.
And then you could play in those too. And that was a lot of fun. Like climbing.
I used to build
them.
Caves in those things.
Yeah, we would build the caves and all that. So yeah, I grabbed a picture of myself on that hill, which I played on many times when I was very small. And I could see my mom pulling into the parking lot to pick me up and everything. So.
I've been meaning to kind of go back and look at my old schools and stuff like that. But that's a big sign of growing up when you have these tobogganing hills that you thought were huge and you look at them as a kid, as an adult, and you're like, oh, that's actually very small.
Hmm.
Yeah, there's we had a favorite tobogganing hill because Toronto is extremely hilly where I grew up. And it is now at the point, like I kind of visited it. It's at the point where I guess we use it so much that the roots of the trees there are all exposed. And so if you run into one, you're going headlong into down the rest of the hill. So even toboggan down that hill now, like you would have to have some deep snows. And unfortunately, we just don't get really deep snows anymore, except when, you know, maybe you get a wild snowstorm every so often. But it used to be when I was a kid, you can count on snow being on the ground all the time, but you can't really do that as much now.
Yeah.
So spawning sucks now.
It's quite variable, actually.
It's very variable, yeah.
Things climate change.
Thank you. Yeah. We can have August and October or we can have, December and April. Why not?
Yeah, it's a dice roll.
It is. Keep things interesting.
And that's it for this week's episode of Acts of Blood God. Thank you so much for listening and thank you so much for supporting the show. If you enjoyed it, go check it out. Go leave us a review on the podcatcher of your choice. You can also support us at patreon.com/bloodgodpod. And we have a lot of merch over at shop.bloodgodpod.com. Hey, we're coming up on Black Friday and that kind of thing in about a month. We're going to have a lot of deals. So please look forward to that. Mm. And also, I got this big bag full of pins. And I'm going to put up more orders for year 2 pins on the shop. So if you missed it the first time, you're going to be able to buy it. As always, thank you to our Stars of Destiny for joining us in the live show. And this week, we were joined by Abby of the Moon, Anthrax Beast, Zixa, True RWX, Harvest Lunatic, Mango Ult, Sardin, Supermoop, and Teeps. Thank you so much for joining us. We're heading now into the post show. So if you want to listen to that, you got to subscribe to the Stars of Destiny. But for everybody else, till next time, happy adventuring.
That was not a bad fight.